Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Normally, being a little extra might be a bit much, but not when it comes to healthcare. That's why UnitedHealthcare's Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, supplement your primary plan so you manage out-of-pocket costs. Learn more at uh1.com.
Welcome to the Noya Caribbean Podcast. This podcast is dedicated to bringing to life Caribbean history and culture from our Indo-Caribbean experience, the lives of our indigenous people, the Arawak, Kalinago, Taino, and more, our African heritage, and of course, our gangster stories of resistance and rebellion in the Caribbean, throwing in the history of our music, food, and cultural practices. The more we know our history, the more we know ourselves. So get to know yourself through Know Your Caribbean, the Know Your Caribbean podcast.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to this month's episode of the Know Your Caribbean podcast, where I'm bringing to you guys bad girl stories. And one of my favorite stories that I did come across was about the apprenticeship period and in St. Vincent. Now, a lot of us have been told in the history books that the apprenticeship period was just like a softer version of enslavement, that it was, you know, it wasn't that bad, right? And through this amazing essay by a historian called Sheena Boa, she's given me a great insight into what post-emancipation, quote unquote, was like, and especially the apprenticeship period. And within the apprenticeship period, you know, what we know is that's 4 to 6 years, and that you'd get like a small little bit of money, and that, you know, maybe the hours are not so bad, or you'd be trained into integrating into normal society as a free person. But it really wasn't like that. Surprise, surprise, right? So, you know, through this essay, it's come to understand in terms of, basically, let's look at it this way. When we look at things like in Hollywood movies or whatever, there's this perception that slave owners were just like hyped to kill the enslaved like anytime they want, right? When in truth is, at the end of the day, that was their property. So it was only when it was within extreme cases would an enslaved person be killed. If they knew that, for example, these people are planting seeds into the heads of other enslaved people and therefore can cause problems. These were their kinds of examples, or if it was extreme, extreme, quote unquote, insubordination. But at the end of the day, if say I paid £50 for you, I have made an investment into your body to work for me for the rest of your life. So yes, they do a lot of horrible punishments, would make you very near death, but not want you to die per se. You know, they would kill you emotionally, mentally, spiritually, but not physically, because they needed your physical body to do the work for them. When we look at apprenticeship, within this essay showing that actually corporal punishment went up during apprenticeship period in St. Vincent, because in their mind, they're like, well, I only have you for the next 4 years, so I'm going to work the shit out of you. And well, if you die, you die, kind of thing. Because, you know, within a few short months or years, I no longer own you. So all of these things, and women especially felt the apprenticeship hard. So in another misconception is looking at the fact that they just wanted to quote unquote breed and save people like throughout the 400 years, like the more children the better. That wasn't entirely the case. It was mainly towards the end of the slave trade, because for them, in the slave owner's eyes, it was cheaper to just import another enslaved person if somebody died, as opposed to raising a baby up until, you know, they reach teenage years. So that's waiting a good amount of years and getting back on your investment, right? So it was only when the slave trade was made illegal in 1807 by the British government. So we're looking at the British colonies in particular. So therefore, they could not transport enslaved people from Africa and other places. But slavery could still happen and still did happen for another 30 plus years. So when this happened, then they're like, ooh, okay, shit, we need to, you know, start, they would say we need to increase our quote-unquote stock, right? So this is when they started to encourage enslaved women to have more children and all of that. Before that, it was a hindrance. They're like, yo, if you're pregnant and therefore you can't work, or if you're breastfeeding, therefore you can't work. But after 1807, they're like, yo, okay, incentivizing a lot of enslaved women to have children. So this did happen before 1807, of course, but it boosted after 1807 because they couldn't bring in any more new people to replace those who had passed away. So, and even in another wonderful essay that was sent to me by a great friend of mine from Grenada, was looking at how enslaved women resisted these incentives and, you know, would refuse to have children, would do things to make themselves infertile, and do other methods to hinder them having children as an act of resistance against, because they knew, you just want me to have children so you can just enslave my child and make money off of my child. It's not happening. And you find this instance across the board with enslaved women who used this as a means to resist. And it's a very, very difficult but very interesting concept, and not something you hear about very often. So within the apprenticeship period, it was the same kind of wake up early in the morning, do the work and them kind of thing. So punishments varied, but they had incorporated the use of this thing called the treadmill. And I'm going to attach a photograph of the treadmill when I'm sharing this episode. But the treadmill is like this big, not like the exercise treadmills we know, but it's this big round wheel of which is kind of like steps, and it's just rotating with several people can stand in a row on it. And you must be just walking this wheel for hours on end, walking this wheel. So it's like walking up steps for hours. And if you get tired, if you slip, the steps keep rolling. It could be very painful because it would cut your shins and, you know, your ankles and your foot and all these kind of things like that. And if you fell behind, there would be an overseer there to crack the whip to make sure that you did not fall behind on the treadmill. So if you got tired, some people would faint, some people would fall off, and then they would be whipped. So it was very, very brutal. And the use of the treadmill basically just shot out of the atmosphere during apprenticeship. And this was a new way to punish enslaved people. So one of the things, when looking at how enslaved people were punished, they had a few ways of recording this. And one of these examples is called the Protector of the Slaves book. And I found this for St. Lucia and for a couple of other islands, where it was a thing that existed where enslaved people could go to complain against their masters or their overseers. Extremely insightful, and also an opportunity to find or hear the voices of enslaved people. Yes, it's been transcribed by some white man or whatever. So you can find these instances of hearing their voices, even though it is through this, you know, white person writing, but you can read through the lines and really feel and hear their side of the story, which is not something you hear very often, right? And then also, when slavery ended, the government decided to put in place these so-called magistrates. These magistrates, bunch of white men, they're all friends with the slave owners, but it's where you go to complain against any injustices that are happening on the plantation. And then they're supposed to keep record of how many people were whipped, how many lashes did they get. There's a certain quota of lashes you're supposed to get. But who is really going to be monitoring all of these things? But even within this monitoring, looking at through the research done with this essay, you're seeing that, yes, punishments went up. I guess also because enslaved people looking like, y'all telling us slavery's done, but we still have to be doing all the same things we was doing before, if not more. So of course it's going to be this upheaval of, you know, of emotion and anger, and those who just don't want to do it. So anyways, I'm going to read a few excerpts from this amazing essay. And looking at some of the reports from the magistrates, their frustrations, and hearing some real bad gelting going on here, right? So I'm going to jump in where it says here. Apprentices had learned to mobilize themselves as a group during the slavery period. In St. Vincent, the last enslaved protest took place on several estates in the Carib district on the island. The apprentices from three of these estates staged a similar protest during the cropping period in early March of 1835. The dispute occurred when the managers of Orange Hill, Turama, and Waterloo estates decided to change the hours and method of payment during the busy crop period. Lieutenant Governor Tyler had suggested that during cropping, the apprentices should earn 1.5 pence for each extra hour they had worked. 1.5 pence an hour. However, within a week, the apprentices felt that they were being cheated and not paid promptly. I mean, even cheating people out of 1.5 pence an hour, really? The managers then decided to share among their apprentices $1, just over 4 shillings, for each hogshead of sugar that was produced. Do y'all know the size of a hogshead? A hogshead is like, you know, them barrels you send down home? When you're sending things home and things like that, right? Even fatter than that, about the same height, but fatter. So $1 per hogshead of sugar, okay? That's, I think, it's like hundreds and hundreds of pounds worth of sugar. So the apprentices did not agree with this, no doubt because they did not believe that they would eventually receive the money. The managers also, this not even that they felt like, okay, this is not enough money for us, we deserve more, but they just felt like they're not even going to get paid that little $1. The managers also decided that they would organize shifts, so work was carried out over a 13 to 14 hour period, with gangs working alternately in the fields and mills. Robert Pittman was called in to liaise with the field workers. I think he's some magistrate, right? In his report, he admitted that he thought the demands of the managers were excessive, but he agreed to support them. See what I'm saying? Friend support friend, right?
Want flexibility? Take yoga. Want flexibility with your health insurance? Check out United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly medical, dental, and vision coverage that may be right for you. More at uh1.com.
Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
The results were a week of protests with the apprentices refusing to turn out before 6 in the morning. The punishment of 128 people and a full-scale riot when some of the offenders were taken to the workhouse. The workhouse is where the treadmill is. It's hot, humid, stuffy, no water is given, and you are working this treadmill for hours. A lot of people did lose their lives working the treadmill. So it goes on to say, the protest began in earnest on Tuesday the 3rd of March when Pittman sentenced one man from Waterloo Estate for 2 days extra labor for refusing to start work at 4 in the morning. He then went to Turama to talk to the apprentices. Hey, the women began chanting, no 6 to 6, 6 to 6, no 6 to 6, in reply to his order. Pittman had 8 women put in confinement and then ordered the gangs to start work at 5 each morning. So because they say 6 is too early and they say no 6 to 6, so that you can see the shifts were 12-hour shifts, 6 a.m. to 6 in the night. He then decided, nah, I'm going to punish y'all and make y'all do 5 o'clock, right? So this is during the so-called era of when slavery was not so bad, right? At Orange Hill Estate, he told the gangs to start work at 4 o'clock. 4 o'clock. All right, see the wickedness about these magistrates who are supposed to be fair and all of this, right? So on Thursday, he was summoned to punish the field workers who had turned out late. So once again, acts of resistance are happening. They may feel small, but they're actually really big. And these are the things that we don't hear about. We just thought, yeah, we were yes, master, no, master. But these are acts of resistance that were happening constantly. So on Waterloo, 4 men and 9 women were charged. The women were sentenced to 2 extra days labor on the estate, but the men were sentenced to 40 lashes with the cat, or the cat of nine tails, which is a whip that has nine tails. They call it a cat of nine tails. Sometimes they would do things like put nails on each extra strand of the whip, not for all, but this was one of the things. The cat was something, was a very brutal thing that they had. So they were sentenced to 40 lashes with the cat, which Pittman ordered to be carried out immediately. This man is an asshole, you know. As the men were being flogged, one woman named Rebecca continued to shout 6 to 6 as a sign of defiance. 6 to 6. Pittman sentenced her to hard labor on the treadmill for 1 week. So every day, for 12 hours a day, she had to work the treadmill. I think obviously they would have had to have had breaks in between that, because there's no way that someone could survive that. But still, it's horrible, horrible, horrible. If you're interested in hearing the insights of an apprentice, there is a book by James William, a young apprentice. He was 18 in Jamaica and wrote a lot about it. I will warn you, I bought it. It's about 2 years now I have the book. I have not finished it. It's very, very, very hard. It's not even a long book. But I found it really a very, very difficult read. And this is why I come to say about how the apprenticeship period was real dread. It was horrible. As horrible as slavery. And I will explain a little bit more why in first women especially, it was worse. So the essay goes on to say, on Orange Hill, a similar scene occurred. 6 women were sentenced to 2 days extra labor, and 2 men were immediately given 40 lashes. So as we can see here, and this is now the third estate, where it is more women than men are being called in to be punished for being defiant, quote unquote defiant. Here, a number of women began to shout and protest during the flogging of the men. One woman was held in confinement but was released because her husband promised that she would behave in the future. A young man was also sentenced to the treadmill for 1 week for threatening the overseer who had ordered a young man's mother to work in the mill. On Turama, 6 men and once again 8 women were charged, and 2 men and 3 women were sentenced to the treadmill for 1 week. The rest were ordered to work an extra 2 days on the estate. Pittman had realized the dangers of public flogging, so that he was seeing that enslaved people were speaking up more against floggings and then finding different ways of punishment. So it goes on to say, the following day, the apprentices on all 3 estates refused to turn out before 6. So as you can see, it's not even to say they were even fighting per se for 6 to 6 is a problem. So as you can see, I misread earlier when you're saying no, 6 to 6. So they were asking for it to be 6 to 6. So they were asking for a 12-hour shift, for it to be 6 a.m. to 6 in the night. And they're telling them to do more, right? So when you're saying no, as in not no 6 to 6, as in no, we are asking for 6 to 6. This makes it even more... Okay, I'm gonna continue. The following day, the apprentices on all 3 estates refused to turn out before 6. And on Turama, they refused to work in the mill. Pittman wrote to the lieutenant governor to request extra help and decided to take those sentenced to hard labor off the estates. With the aid of constables from neighboring estates, the prisoners were put on a cart and led off the estate. However, the other apprentices followed and attempted to release them. You see? Bad man, bad girl thing again. So Pittman was obviously afraid of violence and described riding at the crowd to try and disperse them. By the time they had reached the police barracks at Georgetown, a crowd of over 120 people had gathered. The police managed to arrest a further 9 people who were placed in custody in the barracks and on nearby estates. During the evening, the crowd dispersed. On Saturday, the apprentices again refused to work before 6. Consequently, Pittman returned on Monday and sentenced them primarily to hard labor for 10 hours a day in the penal gang. The work was to be carried out on the estates under the supervision of the troops. Thus, the planters not only won the extra hours, but they were also no longer required to pay them. You see what I'm saying about how these wicked freaking magistrates, because they all in cahoots with the owners and the managers of the estates, right? So it goes on to say, two men had their sentences of flogging remitted in exchange for naming one man and one woman as the ringleaders of the protest. In fact, Pittman remained convinced that there had been a well-led conspiracy on the estate because the women's chants of 6 to 6 had seemed rehearsed, and because the women had spat at and cursed their husbands who did not join in their protests during the first round of the floggings. He goes on to complain, and I quote, "These poor misguided people have been misled and have been the victims, whilst the designing and the most guilty have as yet escaped the operation of the law." So folks, this is where we can see how women have been in the forefront on several estates in St. Vincent during the apprenticeship period, where they were even fighting their husbands for not fighting. And, you know, I think it's such a beautiful thing to see this communal thing of chanting just even for the 12-hour shift of 6 to 6, and how this spread like wildfire to other estates, and how did these things even happen when they were not allowed to travel and all of these things. It is always a mystery to me how these messages traveled. But what an amazing thing. And once again, seeing more women being punished for protesting, for being quote-unquote insolent, or for resisting or turning up late and all of those things, is absolutely incredible. And one of the things I wanted to add why apprenticeship was so much more difficult for women was, during slavery, is there used to be nurseries. So therefore, the older enslaved women who physically were not able to work in the fields and do all of the hard labor for sugar, or perhaps someone who was disabled, they were set to work in the nurseries. So they would be the ones looking after the children, whilst the able-bodied mothers went out into the fields and to continue to work as normal. When slavery ended, these nurseries closed. And like I said earlier on in the podcast, when they're like, they don't want the enslaved to die per se, because I've bought you, you are my property, and I need you to work. Now they're like, oh, I only have you for another 4 years. You old? I don't care how old you are, you're going back in the field, and I'm going to work you to the bone now, because I'm in a few, just very, very soon, I'm not going to own you anymore. So a lot of people who used to care for the children, whether elderly and disabled, were sent back out into the fields to work. Mothers, they had to carry the children on their back. Even little toddlers and stuff like that were made to do smaller tasks like weeding and things like that, but they were put out into the field also. And even with schooling and things like that, their schools and the whole efforts to kind of reintegrate or help formerly enslaved people assimilate into society so they can be independent, they made sure to limit the subject matter to things like husbandry and like agriculture. So they're just training you to be a farmer and things like that. And also, enslaved women, if you wanted to put your child in school, you had to pay for it. So how is it that they could afford to do that? So they had no choice. So they had no more support that they used to have from the older or the disabled enslaved to help look after their children. They just had to do it all on their own. So, you know, this is also going to add to why they are going to be resistant. So these women who are working 12-hour shifts and just demanding even that, and he still wanted to take more from them. But as we can see, these women were not having it. So bigger people like Rebecca and all the other unnamed enslaved women who were doing bad girl things and resisting. Thank you guys for listening to this podcast mini episode. I hope you enjoy. See you guys soon.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.